Hello and welcome to the Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Maria Armudian. In this hour, amid mass protests that have rocked France, the country's Constitutional Council have approved President Macron's move to raise the retirement age to 64. What does all of this mean for French politics and for the future of unions in French politics and the workplace? Doug Becker explores.
I'm Doug Becker. For the last 2 weeks or so, protesters in France have taken to the streets to protest recent government actions by President Emmanuel Macron. At the root of the protest is the French president's decision to raise the retirement and pension age in France from 62 to 64. We're recording on Thursday, April 13th, and on this day, up to 600,000 protesters have apparently taken to the streets across France in support of the protest, including a targeting of the French luxury corporation LVMH, and a ruling on the constitutionality of the president's decision is expected tomorrow. So on today's show, we ask, who are the protesters? How has the reaction of the state influenced the protest, including the use of force on behalf of the French police? And what do these protests mean for French politics, for the future of President Macron, as well as for pensions across the world as a part of the debate about retirement age? Our panel today is Martin Shane. He's professor of politics emeritus at New York University. He's the author of The Border, Policy and Politics in Europe and the United States, and Shadows Over Europe, The Development and Impact of the Extreme Right in Europe. Patrick Chemerol is Senior Resident Scholar at the Stanford Center in Washington. He's the author of France's Vanishing Center, Macron versus the Yellow Vests, and the French Presidential Election, Can Macron Stay Ahead of the Pack? And Herrick Chapman is Professor Emeritus of History and French Studies at New York University. He's the author of A Century of Organized Labor in France, A Union Movement for the 21st Century, co-edited with Mark Castleman and Martin Shane, and also France's Long Reconstruction in Search of a Modern Republic. Thank you all very much for joining us today. Martin Shane, I'll ask you the first question. The protests have certainly made the news. There's images coming out. There's been quite a bit of reporting on these protests, but ultimately, what are these protests about, and what's driven so many French citizens to the streets?
What a great question. To me, it often feels like deja vu all over again. One of the things that I've worked on and off during my academic career is cycles of protest. And one of the things that we all know, all of us on this panel know, is that the kinds of protests that are taking place in France in some ways are unusual, particularly given the number of people now, but in fact represent a pattern of politics in France that has existed for a long time. The question, there are many questions one can ask. Are these protests being led by the unions in protest over pension reform? Are these protests really being used by what are in fact very weak unions in order to mobilize their own strength? I'm certainly not sure that I can give you answers to any of these things, but in fact, these protests are and have been for a long time. This pattern has been for a long time a part of the pattern of French political life. That these protests are taking place during the presidency of Macron is not unexpected. He is largely seen as, broadly seen, not just by the protesters, but broadly seen within France, as rather elitist, not responsive to the popular will, as a president, if I may say so, who is typically Sciences Po, that is coming from the elite schools in France, who understands nothing about what's going on. I'm not sure that I, having studied this for a long period of time, I'm not sure I see it exactly that way. What I really see is that pension reform That is, the issue at hand may be a subsidiary issue to the challenge against the president himself. But pension reform has been an issue in France for the last 30, 40 years. It is in part a reflection of the changes in the demography of the French population. We have now a retiring generation of people, if I may say so, people like me, who are a very large generation, being supported by a much smaller generation of people who are actually paying the bill. What's interesting about these protests to me, as it always is that the smaller generation of people paying the bill seem to be perfectly willing to do it and seem to be willing to go into the streets in support of people like me. I'm really touched by this, but in fact, in terms of how pension systems work, it really is not it doesn't seem to be well balanced. And so there are very real issues here, but there are also real political issues that are apart from the real issues at hand.
And we will definitely drill down on some of the pension questions, but let's start off talking about, you know, some of the politics and the implications for the protests. And then I promise we're going to return to that question. And Patrick Chamorel, I know you've written about one set of protests that certainly captured global headlines, the so-called yellow vest protests, that also seem to kind of fit the, is the president out of touch with the working class in France? Are these similar to those protests, or is there something else going on here?
Well, certainly the French feels that they have lived through a series of crises, starting with the yellow vest, of course, which was probably the bigger one. That looks a little bit like what's in front of us today. But there was also COVID, there was Ukraine and inflation. And so I think that the retirement reform is really not the kind of reform that people want and expected. They want to be more protected. And they have absolutely no willingness to work more, especially since, COVID has kind of devalued, work, not just in France, but in whole of Europe and the United States. And the second thing that was devalued is also the notion of deficits, because Macron spent very liberally to protect people in their jobs and businesses during the COVID crisis. So there is this background which is not favorable to the reform of retirement. I mean, of course, there's also political factors. The fact that Macron, even though he announced in his program during the last campaign, like almost a year ago, that he will try to reform, the retirement age and take it up to 65. In a way, people are very confused and disappointed that he has not laid out a vision for the country for his second term. Actually, he barely did campaign for his re-election. And so there is a sense, that Macron is kind of illegitimate, that people voted against Marine Le Pen, but not really for Macron, and certainly not for the promise he made about lifting the retirement age. So that's the context. But what's special about this crisis, I think, compared with the yellow vest and previous mobilizations against retirement reforms in like 2003, 2010, and 19, is two things. First of all, the fact that the demonstrations and strikes has continued after the adoption of the law. And that's probably in part because of the way it was passed, with the 49.3 provision of the Constitution. That means without really a vote for it, even though, of course, there was no majority against the law, so it passed for that reason. The other reason is that there is, parallel to the demonstrations by mostly the unions and the public sector, etc. So that's really has not changed from the past. There is a very, very high degree of violence by a totally different crowd, you know, not the unions, etc., but, you know, young radicals fueled by the far left party of Jean-Luc Mélenchon, which is fairly well represented in the National Assembly. And so those things, I think, are what's new. Again, you know, continued mobilization even after passage of the law, and then extreme violence by people who have nothing really at stake in the not anytime soon, you know, in the retirement reform, but they are mostly radical environmentalists and the black blocs, you know, which were made famous by opposing free trade reforms in the past.
Just a real quick clarification then. The law was passed by Macron, correct? And then Parliament could have voted to overturn it, but couldn't get enough votes to be able to overturn it.
It was passed because no majority, you know, could basically oppose the law and maybe trigger, a dissolution by Macron. So this is a very kind of specific provision of the Constitution. The idea was about, you know, for De Gaulle, you know, to ensure the stability of the National Assembly and to be sure that if people oppose something, there would be a majority to replace, you know, the outgoing majority. In this case, actually, there is no majority, of course. And that's what makes this also a political crisis, is that Macron, since his re-election and the legislative elections that followed almost a year ago, he has no majority. Mm. And the allies on which he counted to pass this law, which are on his center right, those, you know, got split and didn't really deliver the goods. So instead of putting this bill to the votes, Macron figured that he would not have a majority. So he preferred to use that, you know, constitutional article that passes the law, but only, if no majority is voting against it. I hope it's clear. I mean, but
absolutely, and I think that's one of the lessons here is this question about sort of legitimacy, the nature of the French system, and why there's been so much focus on the individual of Macron as opposed to seeing it more broadly as a political issue. The French president has more power than, say, the American president does with the ability to do these sorts of things. And we'll return back to that question. But Herrick Chapman, I want to bring you in because part of what Patrick Tomorrow had suggested is that this is not just labor. And Martin raised the issue as well about kind of a weak labor unions. It's being reported at times. I mean, these are the unions who are leading these strikes, but being suggested here in our discussion today that it isn't necessarily labor that's leading it. What's the role that organized labor really has been playing in these protests?
The question of pension reform has a history of this pattern whereby the unions are the line of defense, but there's a lot of popular support behind them. I mean, the most dramatic case before this one was in 1995, which was the first major effort to reform the system. The railway workers went out on strike, and then there was tremendous. It was about a 2-month protest, and several unions were involved. But there was a lot of public support for this, even with the enormous inconveniences that the transport strike creates for people in anywhere, but obviously in France as well. And so the unions play a kind of vanguard role for the whole sort of social security system in a way, despite their, the unions are, it's a very different union world than we're used to in the Anglo-American scene. There are several unions, they're not closed shops. Unions don't have large memberships. They don't have a lot of money, but they have a lot of political influence, and they have this performative role of strikes and demonstrations that gather many, many more people than are actually members of the union, and often people who are not part of the trade union work in any fashion. So it's a kind of symbolic and political role that people know very well in France, and it goes back goes back a long ways, actually, but it's particularly since 1995. It's every effort, as Patrick said, there's been, you know, these several, there's been four or five major efforts to change the rules in the pension system. And every single time the unions play this role with, and in all cases with a lot of public support. What varies by case, though, is the extent to which the unions themselves are unified. And there have been, in 2003, the CFDT, which is the more reformist union, was willing to negotiate with the government, so some reforms were made. In 2010, there was some division, though. There, in 2010, that was when the age went from 60 to 62. So the protest didn't actually work in that case. It worked very well in 95. It worked in 2019, up to the point where the government withdrew the reform package because of COVID. And it remains to be seen. It doesn't look like it's working now. Obviously, as we get into what's going to happen, which, it remains to be seen exactly what will happen. There is a case in 2006 where the protests reversed a law that had already been made. And this was the reform which was going to set new rules for the basically allowing employers to lay off or fire people in their first jobs, young people coming out of school and out of higher education. And there was tremendous protest, mostly by young people in that case. And the government withdrew what it had already passed. So the fact that it's still going on now in the face of the invocation of Article 49.3 to establish the law is not completely crazy. I mean, it's there's a precedent for still reversing it.
And you listen to Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Doug Becker. We're talking about the ongoing political protests across France over pension reform, raising the pension age from 62 to 64. And our guests today are Martin Shane of New York University, Patrick Chamorel of the Sanford Center in Washington, and Herrick Chapman of New York University. So Martin Shane, one of the issues that's been highlighted here is some of the generational issues with respect to these protests. You would imagine the group that'd be leading the charge if the issue is pension reform would be older workers seeing themselves, you know, having to work for two more years. But one of the narratives that we've been talking about is how many young people have taken to the streets. So how much are these protests a generational shift where you've got a younger French activists, protesters, et cetera, doing some of the heavy lifting, and a signal that there could be a new age of protest across France? Because again, so many of these protesters are so young.
Well, I don't know if it's a generational shift. Probably the best way to look at this is cycles of protest. The dynamic that is driving this, as other so-called protest movements, is that unions appear to be taking leadership positions. And the power of unions is not, in France, is not judged by their membership. And it's not judged by their ability to recruit people, but it's largely judged on the basis of their ability to mobilize people. So if you examine these cycles of protest, one of the things you see is that unions will take what appears to be a leadership position, that is, they'll define a position, and then wait for people to respond to it, to see how many people they can mobilize. This is a tried and true process in France, certainly in France under the Fifth Republic. And to the extent they're able to mobilize large numbers of people, the unions themselves then become much more important because they become the spokespeople for whatever issues have come up. But the question you asked is a much larger one. The question is doesn't really involve the power of unions, but involves the issues themselves that are coming up. Why is it that these young people who really have the most to gain by increasing the in many ways, because they, otherwise the system will just go bankrupt. Why are they, do they appear to be taking the lead in this? And I think that's a kind of key question. It really thrusts a new generation into the public stage. And the idea of people not working past the age of 62 on its face to an American audience seems ridiculous, right? But in fact, in France, it's not ridiculous. It's expectations that have been changed. That is something that has been given, is being taken back. And in this sense, this actually does mobilize young people. That is, a benefit they thought they had has been taken back. But of course, they don't take into consideration is that these are the people who are financing them. And this has really not been clarified. So yeah, I think it is a kind of generational shift. It's a generational shift in terms of who can be mobilized. And we'll see how far it can go. It's in the context of an unpopular president, particularly among young people. So we'll see how far it can go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Patrick, you then also highlighted that this may be about other issues too, that, you know, that how much of these protests, they're triggered by the pension reform question, but it seems like there's other groups, other issues that are taking, you know, to the streets, which is not, I mean, we're familiar with that in the United States, where, for example, Black Lives Matter was about one specific issue that then kind of could fan out about, you know, larger issues about equality and civil rights. Is that part of what's going on here, with particularly with the younger protesters taking to the streets?
The Yellow Vest movement was triggered by, you know, the rise of a tax on gas, you know, which was an environmental tax, and then of course, you know, new ideas circulated during the demonstration by the Yellow Vest people, especially, you know, like direct democracy, etc. This time, I think that the main other issue, besides of course the opposition to Macron, which is not insignificant, is inflation, is the cost of living, you know, the protection of people's purchasing power. Many people really cannot make ends meet. And this was revealed especially during the last presidential campaign, so about a year ago. And the person who led on that issue was Marine Le Pen. She didn't lead on immigration. She led on purchasing power. And that's a part of the explanation of why she did so well. Obviously, she lost in the runoff, but she did very well in the first round and better in the runoff than 5 years ago, earlier. So I think that that's something that should be taken into consideration. Now, about who demonstrates and who is being mobilized, the young, the not so young, I think almost everybody is mobilized, except the retirees. And because the retirees, of course, they already have their pensions. You know, so they want others to continue financing their pensions, but they and so they have nothing to lose. And the other interesting factor about the retiree, it is really the stronghold of Macron's constituency. So Macron's constituency is basically retirees, and then, you know, bobos, which is like the urban, you know, well-off, well-educated crowds, you know, in big cities. So anyway, I think that yes, it's most everybody else is very opposed to this reform, because especially people who work hard already, because they think first of all that there are always those who are targeted when it comes to making a special effort. And they say, well, the rich, for example, don't, because Macron actually, you know, like decrease the taxation of the rich, you know, to stimulate investment, for example. And they say, look, no, nothing is being asked, you know, to the rich, but everything, you know, to us. The other thing is that in France, there is a larger fraction of the population who doesn't work than in any other comparable country. And they say, all these guys, you know, they get lots of benefits, you know, for not working. So basically, it's a small section of the population who work, and this is the one that is being asked to pay up, basically. So that's now for the young themselves. I think that the young are not demonstrating mostly for retirement, except as an opposition to Macron, but they are very radicalized on issues such as the environment, and so the young are fighting a different fight in a way. They are fighting for retirement reform against it, but they're also fighting issues that pushes them to being very radical. I mean, the best example was this demonstration against for the environment against basically work to capture water and to and that would be for agriculture and for the environmentalist it's really it's criminal in a way, and they have a very 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 high degree of violence in that little corner of France, in central France, a few weeks ago. So this is a population of very young people only. So see, the retirees are not mobilized for the reason that I said, and the young are mobilized, but on a slightly different set of issues, and they express lots of violence, which the unions don't express. I mean, actually, the union, they fear that their reputation is going to be hurt by all of this violence. And that kind of deters also many people who would continue to demonstrate today because of the violence, they don't. And so there is really an opposition of interest between the unions and the violent young people.
And Herrick Chapman is our historian on the panel, probably best suited to answer this question of, these protests seem to be violent. Is this consistent with protests in France? First of all, are they more violent than French protests typically have been? And is this kind of a new wave of protest tactics within France?
That's a really good question. And it's not a simple one to answer. I think there's certainly lots of precedent for political violence in France, virtually in any country, but France, has a long history of this going back far, even much earlier than the French Revolution. The French are very, they have this history, but in general, political protests, strikes and demonstrations are generally over the last 50, 60 years have not been particularly violent, with a few important exceptions, because this kind of protest that we've been describing has really become an institutionalized part of the political process in France. Starting, I think, as I've sort of argued in my book on the Long Reconstruction, starting in the Fourth Republic, and then it gets more thoroughly institutionalized in the Fifth Republic, and it comes out of a pattern of a kind of protest dialogue between state elites and various kinds of interest groups. Not all. There are some interest groups that don't need to do this, but because of the way this political process has evolved in the absence of a very strong sort of social democratic party or a labor party or whatever, this has come to be. And there's a right-wing versions of this too, very important right-wing protests. Some of them have been violent as well. But there are some important exceptions. There was a violent aspect to May 68 that involved a kind of almost a kind of performative violence between the police, the riot police, and demonstrators, particularly student demonstrators. The Yellow Vest movement developed not as a whole, but in general, the Yellow Vest movement was nonviolent, but there was an important part of it that developed violence. And there is something, I think, since the 1990s across much of sort of the Western and developed world in general. This Patrick mentioned the black box. I mean, that block, that there is a international to call it a movement is, yes, it's a movement, but there's a kind of ritualized, highly violent form of protest that's basically anti-globalist, anti-capitalist, comes out of an anarchist tradition as much as a sort of certain kind of quasi-communist tradition. It's been very important in Germany. It's been very important elsewhere. And France has that too. And and that has been added to, it's an appendage to this, and it's been pretty consistently involved in many of these protests over the last 20, 25 years. And there was an aspect of that with the yellow vests, and it's certainly an important aspect now. And it's highly controversial. I mean, most people who are involved in these protests detest this because it really it derails the protest movement. It empowers the state to use police power that should not be used to the extreme that it is. So there's a recent history of political violence that isn't part of an age-old pattern. And there is also obviously long historical precedence of this too, but I think we're in a different age of political violence. And it's been practiced on the right as well with the new populism.
When we come back, will these events polarize France? And how will the decisions affect retirement in France and across the industrialized world? Stay with us. This is the Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Maria Armudian. Some 600,000 demonstrators have taken to the streets to oppose Macron's raising of the retirement age. But Macron and the Constitutional Council have remained undeterred. How will these events affect politics and work life in France and beyond? Doug Becker explores.
I'm Doug Becker. Our panel today is Martin Shane, Professor of Politics Emeritus at New York University, Patrick Chemerel, Senior Resident Scholar at the Stanford Center in Washington, and Herrick Chapman, Professor Emeritus of History and French Studies at New York University. So, Martin Shane, to return back to something you talked about before the break, you had said that Macron's constituency, his coalition, seemed to consist largely of older people and wealthy people in urban centers. That doesn't seem to be a terribly sustainable coalition. And at a time where the two rivals that did the best and seemingly the power centers, once Macron can't run for re-election, could be on the right, Marine Le Pen, and on the left, Mélenchon. Is France moving in that direction where in essence it's going to be this highly polarized, really far right, far left political parties where the center is kind of collapsing around Macron's unpopularity?
Yeah, it is an interesting image. No, I don't think so. The power of the support of the far right, that is of Marine Le Pen, has been growing modestly over a long period of time. And one could say that she has a very solid 20% of the electorate on her side. And then an additional 20%, which will vote for her on the margins. Macron really dominates the center for the moment. And I think he will continue to dominate the center. But I really, 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 what we're saying is that the state of political parties in France, which we talk about as if they actually exist, has in fact been changing. Political parties have become weaker in a number of ways. They've become weaker in terms of their membership, that has really gone downhill. We can no longer talk about political parties in terms of membership. Even the French Communist Party can no longer be spoken of in terms of membership. The way we speak of political parties now is in terms of their followership, that is, those who agree with their ideas and agree with the candidates they put forward, a very American sort of concept. And so the power of political parties has really changed quite a lot. And the ability, I mean, it's true that Macron has had a weakened ability to maintain a majority in the National Assembly. That really is the case. On the other hand, as we know from the application of the constitutional Article 49.3, there is no majority that opposes Macron. There's no majority that can be organized that says we are opposed to the prime minister, not so much the president. We're opposed to his prime minister. And so there you have it. Macron is, in fact, the only leader who can form working majorities for particular pieces of legislation within parliament. So are we moving towards a bipolar situation in France? I doubt it, at least not any more bipolar than we now have. What we have is, if you want to model for it, I would look really to the early days of the Fifth Republic, or perhaps to the Fourth Republic, or to some of the worst days, as Herrick might agree, or maybe not, to the third days of the worst days of the Third Republic. That is the inability of a government to form a working majority to get things done. And for that, there was always this constitutional solution on essential things, and that is Article 49.3. You can't get it done with a positive majority, and you can get it done by proclaiming you have to form a negative majority. And so it's really a kind of government by decree, a government not so much by proclamation, but a government by decree, which, I mean, if we had more time, I would also argue that most governments in the Western world are in fact governments by decree. Most of what happens through some kind of administrative action. And that's really what's happening in France. What's happening is through some kind of administrative action. Just one more point. We tend to look at these events in France that are happening now as strikes. I really wouldn't look at it that way. These are not strikes that were called by trade unions and that people followed them. These are really cycles of protest to which the unions latch onto them. And as often as not during recent years in the Fifth Republic, these cycles of protest have turned against the unions. They've become striking points for challenging the unions themselves. And in a large sense, what unions in France are most afraid of, and we might want to explore this a little bit, is being overrun by events in the streets. That is, by these cycles of protest, for which they claim a certain amount of leadership, but in fact have no basis for claiming this. Let me stop here.
You know, and another observation, Patrick Schimmer, I'll ask you this. Protests in France have typically been centered around Paris, or at least it seems to be the pattern. These protests really have hit the entire country. A lot of areas that typically don't see these protests are starting to see that. First of all, is that an accurate observation? And secondly, if it is, what does that mean for the nature of these protests in French politics, that they really are spreading throughout the entire country?
Well, that was the case of the Yellow Vest. They were anchored in the rural areas and small towns, which often are depressed economically. But this is a different crisis, but it is true that many provincial areas, especially mid-sized cities, you know, maybe a little bigger than where the Yellow Vest protest took place, you know, like cities like, and bigger cities like, you know, Poitiers, Bordeaux, Rennes, Nantes, et cetera, there have been a lot of turnout in those cities, maybe because, you know, a big fraction of the population is employed in the public sector, and those are, you know, going to lose some of their régimes spéciaux. You know, they have very specific retirement systems that are very advantageous, actually. But yes, I think it's it shows that, you know, the protests are hitting every corner of France and every social group. Now, on the question of Macron, well, yes, he is actually the best illustration of the weakness of parties since he got elected president on the collapse of the two main parties of the Fifth Republic, and his party has not really crystallized as a strong force. This is a very weak party where there's no great discipline in parliament, and deputies, for example, who come from the center right and those who come from the center left, they really still don't reason and don't back the same kind of issues and priorities. So I think that whether Macron's party will survive him, yeah, it's still an uncertain question, of course. I think that the party has moved to the right. And today it looks, because the left has been so disappointed with Macron, you know, the so-called president of the rich. And therefore, you know, the party is mostly supported by, you know, well-off people and urban people, retirees, etc. And I think it's going to be very difficult to keep a party across the right and the left. And I believe that Macron's party is going to be probably led by Macron's first prime minister, Edouard Philippe, who is very popular in public opinion, but who is slightly to the right of Macron. Okay. And I think that's, you know, the most likely scenario. And then, of course, you'll have the far right, you know, Marine Le Pen, who is benefiting from this crisis the most. You know, today, if the presidential election took place again after this crisis, she would come first in the first round with about 30% of the vote. And then there is, you know, the left, which is even murkier, because is there going to be, you know, some party on the center left, you know, separate from Mélenchon's, you know, coalition, which is mostly dominated by the far left? That is really a very open question. And are the environmentalists going to stick with, you know, with Mélenchon? So we of course we don't know, but I think all of this is very much in flux, and it will partly be the result of what's happening now, whether you know, what the Constitutional Council is going to say tomorrow, whether the current prime minister can stay in place, whether if the decision is to confirm the law, is it going to provoke more protest? And I don't think that Macron will dissolve, because it's really against his own interest. But there are so many questions. Macron would like to keep reforming, but is he going to be able to do so? That's also another question.
And you listen to Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Doug Becker. We're discussing the protests in France and pension reform, raising the pension age from 62 to 64, with Martin Shane of New York University, Patrick Chamorel of the Stanford Center in Washington, and Herrick Chapman of New York University. And I want to make sure that we return back to this question broadly about pension reform. Herrick Chapman, I'll ask you then first. I mean, we have an aging population and pension systems that at least projections suggest may not be supportable based on demographics. And that's not unique to France. We have this discussion about Social Security within the United States, across the EU. You know, we've seen these issues. The Japanese have been wrestling with this issue, et cetera. How much is this issue one that's mobilizing just in general workers' rights? And how much is it kind of a unique issue in that we're going to have to deal with this question at some point? Retirement ages are probably going to have to go up just from a demographic perspective. And this is a lesson that's always going to be a painful decision.
Indeed, every country has its third rail called Social Security, and nobody wants to touch it. And people you can count on there being pushback when people do. You know, it is interesting in the United States, the idea of moving from 62 to 64 doesn't seem like a serious problem. But if you were to ask an American, what if we cut Social Security 25% over the next 30 years, you'd have an argument on the scale of a French argument about the age. So it's a serious issue, but it's a complicated one. I think France has not a unique, but a fairly special version of it because of a lower retirement age. It wasn't always 60. It was François Mitterrand who lowered it in 1981 from 65 to 60 as part of an economic strategy to spread more work around in an economy that was suffering from high unemployment. And then the struggle to bring it back from 60 to a higher number has been going on ever since. The retirement age is not the only way to do it. You can cut benefits or you can raise taxes. It's an extremely complicated system, these pension systems, and there are various ways of engineering them. It's interesting that in 2019, when Macron started on this path, he did not call for raising the age from 62 to 64. He wanted to avoid that fight. And he had a different strategy that was more complicated, involving the introduction of a point system, the elimination of all these special pension systems for different kinds of occupations, so there'd be a bigger pool with which to finance it. I think, has contributed to the problem today that now, as a second effort, he now suddenly is going to change it from 62 to 64. He didn't want to do it now either, but it was his right wing, the Republican Party, the right wing, the moderate right wing party, not the far right, sort of forced him into this strategy. And the problem with the strategy of moving from 62 to 64 across the board is that it unifies everybody. And it unified the unions. Every union decided to fight that. The public generally is fighting that. The other thing that we haven't talked about yet is there is a long tradition since World War II in France of thinking about Social Security, both the health system and the pension system, as what the French call a solidaristic system. That is to say, we're all in this together, and we all pitch into the same sort of common pool, and everyone gets supposedly more or less equal bits of it, unless you have special supplements, of which exist in great abundance now in France, as opposed to a more individualistic system like we have in the United States, where we think of it as, I've contributed my Social Security, I've contributed to my 401k, I get back what I put in. It's not really talked about so much as solidaristic. And I think that's one of the, in addition to, I think Marty's quite right to talk about the importance of young people in this system. I think part of it is that the young people have embraced the solidaristic ideology of France, as every young generation has. And they, even if they themselves don't worry about when they're going to retire, they think about the domestic laborer, the person who's got a very tough job, the street cleaner. They think about that person. That's the way the culture sort of encourages people to think. So, yes, I think there's a kind of special problem in France around this reform, but it's very easy to imagine other solutions besides the retirement age. I think in the end, the low retirement age is unsustainable, but it's not the only way to do it. And I think that's part of the reason why people are so firmly behind it now. There are other things that even Macron, thought could be done about the current situation.
Martin Shane, to kind of, echo what Eric Chapman just said here, what's striking about young people accepting picking up the fight about the pension system, not seeing it as an opportunity to avoid possibly higher taxes or, being forced to work harder to support an older population, is in the U.S. a few years ago, there was a public opinion poll that asked, young people two different questions, and it turned out more of them believed in the existence of extraterrestrial life than believed Social Security would be around when they were 65. So, and I raised that issue, not because so many of them believe in extraterrestrial life, but because there's kind of this expectation that it, you know, if you're 25 right now, Social Security probably won't be around when you're 65. And so it's seen as a transfer payment as opposed to paying into a retirement fund. The French don't seem to view it that way. And there's an expectation that Social Security is, you know, is going to be there. So therefore, this is an inevitable question about raising, either raising the retirement age or increasing taxes, are likely both. Is this just a signal that this question, wherever it's raised around the world, is going to create, you know, protests or at least real opposition to whoever's proposing it?
Maybe. I think Herrick got it right. The notion of solidarité. I have a poster in my hallway which says solidarité. I bought it at the Fête Humanité, that is the communist festival, in 1969. I mean, the idea, this sounds like an American song from the 19th century. But in fact, in France, this idea, in fact, is very, very strong. And the idea that you can mobilize young people for an issue that is really not entirely theirs. It may be in the long run, but no young people actually believe in the long run. It really is an issue of people approaching retirement and people who are relatively older. One has to be optimistic about the ability of young people to go out on the streets in favor of people who are approaching retirement. Having said that, the demographic issue is very, very clear. There is one other solution to it, and that is you bring in more immigrants to pay into the system. Well, there's something of a non-starter, but nobody is saying that, but I would say that, you know, why not? There may be other solutions for the creative mind to deal with this, but there is one thing that's clear, and that is the dynamics and the system. Something has to be done, and done relatively quickly. That is within the next several years, and that issue is not just an issue for France; it's also an issue for other countries, particularly in the West, in which there is a surfeit of older people and a deficit of younger people in the labor market. And yeah, it's a real challenge for policymakers that will not be solved particularly by going out into the streets. God help me, did I really say that? That will not be solved by people going out into the streets.
Yeah, and with that, we've got about 2 minutes left. Patrick Chemerol, I'm going to give you the last word and ask you a question that is deserving of far more than 2 minutes, but just a quick speculation. And that is, if, as expected, the Constitutional Committee rules that this policy that Macron, you know, has adopted is legal and the pension age goes up, does this issue go away? Or is this one that, are these sets of protests something that we expect to continue?
Well, I would think that, you know, it cannot continue forever. What's likely is that the Constitutional Council will strike down just one or two provisions, but they are not the key provisions. The key provision is lifting the age from 62 to 64. And as long as this remains, you know, is deemed constitutional, I think the law will be, you know, we will stand on its own. I think the bigger uncertainty is about the referendum, the initiative, you know, because if this is considered constitutional to gather 4.8 million signature and to put this issue of the retirement age to the vote of people in a referendum, this could be a really amazingly contentious phase of French politics, and it's going to last for a long time because it takes 9 months to gather this signature. Actually, I'm sure they will be gathered within weeks, even days, but the process, you know, has to last many months, and I think that would poison French politics for a long time, and then we'll see. But it would really be something very, very important and very influential in French politics, because a referendum of that importance has not been tried for many, many years. And you have to go back many, many, many years, you know, to see referendum playing a central role in French politics. You have to go back, you know, to 2005 on the constitution of the EU, but even, you know, under De Gaulle, of course.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Which is a reminder to continue to pay attention to French politics, that the protests have grabbed headlines, but there are some deep divisions, some deep issues within France. And what makes this particularly fascinating to me is not just an obvious interest in French politics, but also seeing the politics playing out on issues that, quite frankly, I think are going to hit a number of countries, in particular industrializing countries, and the implications here in the United States as well. We've been discussing the French protests and the proposal of French President Emmanuel Macron to raise the retirement and pension age in France from 62 to 64. Our panelists today have been Martin Shane, professor of politics emeritus at New York University. He's the author of The Border: Policy and Politics in Europe and the United States and Shadows Over Europe, the Development and Impact of the Extreme Right in Europe. Patrick Chamorro, senior resident scholar at the Stanford Center in Washington. He's the author of France's Vanishing Center, Macron versus the Yellow Vests, and the French presidential election, Can Macron Stay Ahead of the Pack? And Herrick Chapman, professor emeritus of history and French studies at New York University. He's the author of A Century of Organized Labor in France, A Union Movement for the 21st Century. It's co-edited with Mark Kesselman and fellow guest Martin Shane, and France's Long Reconstruction, In Search of a Modern Republic. Thank you all very much for joining us.
And that's it for today's program. Thank you for listening. The Scholar Circle is hosted by Doug Becker. Its managing producers are Ankina Agassian and Melissa Chiprin. Seb Dongre is our webmaster and assistant producer. Our archives are at scholarcircle.org. And our podcasts are on Apple and Google Podcasts and iTunes. Please follow us on @ScholarCircle or me @Armudian and join our Facebook page. I'm the founder, anchor, and occasional host, Maria Armudian.